You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of August 3rd, 2022. And this week, we find out if staying frosty is essential.
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Abor.
My name is Scott Jester.
We're the co-creators of this serious but not humorless conversation about video games. It's the Experience Points podcast.
is this the mindset that Call of Duty puts you into? Like you become an esports chef?
I guess. Yeah. I mean, look, we've been with these folks for ages. You know, it never ends.
War never changes.
War never changes. Although it does change hands, potentially.
Monetarily.
We are talking today about the ongoing attempt by Microsoft to purchase Activision. And specifically, there was a news article that dropped today that kind of revealed some of the ongoing arguments around the antitrust element of an acquisition of this size. If Microsoft makes this purchase, this is one of the biggest acquisitions of all time, certainly in the game space. It's absolutely enormous. And oh, so yeah. Naturally, folks are like, hey, you know what? Maybe it's not a good idea to monopolize all gaming production of the biggest shooters on the market. Maybe we should be putting up a little fight here. So to that end, I guess this is, maybe you probably know a lot more about this kind of stuff than I do.
M&A, baby. Let me talk to you about it.
Like New Zealand has their own commission. And I know like some of the information that came out today was from the lawsuit papers documented by the Brazilian government. Mm. So different countries all kind of lobby against this, or how does that work?
I do not know enough about international ramifications, because I think one thing that shields this a lot is they are formally incorporated in the United States.
And they're both companies.
Exactly. Like, I mean, I'm sure there's, formally incorporated in shell companies out of Delaware or whatever, but like, even so, like they are American companies. So the rest of the world has a harder time legislating that, they might be able to legislate it on a market basis, how the EU can enforce certain things like, oh, you have to standardize on charging ports, or you have to standardize on this sort of packaging or something. But like, I don't think they have much of a leg to stand on in terms of just disallowing the merger from happening, because they are American companies.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's interesting, but it still could potentially have some sort of market impact. And also, if one country's government is asking the question, you could basically be certain every country's government is asking the company the same questions. So like, there have to be those sorts of discussions going on in the United States too. So it's probably similarly relevant.
Well, in this case, it is largely Sony putting up the fight, at least that we've seen thus far, which makes sense. Sony has the most to lose. Yeah. I think what's interesting about the acquisition, and specifically this conversation about Call of Duty, right, is that Microsoft has said, allegedly, that they want Call of Duty to remain a multi-platform franchise, meaning it will be available on both Sony platforms and Microsoft platforms, and who knows, maybe the Switch. However, after the three games that they're obligated to put out on the PlayStation, if the acquisition goes through, there really is no obligation for them, legally speaking, to make Call of Duty available on PlayStation 5.
Yep.
Thus, it brings up not just, of course, the important fight for Sony to push back on, but the concern that Sony raises in this case is Call of Duty too important? Is it too big of a franchise to allow Microsoft to relegate it to their own console, thereby giving them a competitive advantage, not just in the market for shooters, which I think is a totally legitimate argument in and of itself, but too much of a lion's share of those critical games that are the ones that sell consoles.
Yep.
So that's what we're talking a little bit about today. How critical is Call of Duty in our headspace?
It's a tricky scenario, because I think it always felt like Activision was kind of had these golden handcuffs where you're right that Call of Duty is a reliable source of revenue for them. But because it's reliable, the shareholders demand that it becomes reliable all the time. And then you can't innovate because innovation requires failure. You know, like you're going to have to make some missteps here and there. And so, you know, you'll stagnate. And so it seems like there's, you know, in a weird way, you know, the Microsoft acquisition, I think, opens it up more to innovation, strangely enough, because you won't have individual Activision investors forcing them to be like, hey, just make another one of those, you know, like we like the money. And so I think there could potentially be like a different, you could see something different and a little bit more experimental without the big risk of like, you know, multimillionaires not getting their payouts at the end of the year, you know?
Oh, God forbid. What are they going to do, Scott, if they don't have those cushy...
These yachts won't buy themselves.
the mega yachts. Where are you going to put your yacht if you can't fit it into your mega yacht?
I wish I was a little bit more connected just to how Call of Duty is evolving now, just to kind of get a sense of... the vibe of like how people are feeling about it. But like from the outside, it feels like they, you know... There is some interest there still, and you know, whatever, it's not what it was during Modern Warfare 2 or something, but like the world is also different, so you know, it's hard to like write it off like that. It's still, to me, that still seems like a highly relevant franchise.
Oh, for sure.
The question is it essential in the way that would raise the eyebrows of regulators, you know?
Well, one of the notes that they're quoted from the Sony's response to, I guess, the Brazilian government was this quote that I'll just read it out loud. The importance of Call of Duty to entertainment in general is indescribable. The brand was the only video game IP to break into the top 10 of all entertainment brands among fans, joining powerhouses such as Star Wars, Game of Thrones, Harry Potter, and Lord of the Rings.
Now, when they were writing that in 2019, Game of Thrones was still at the top of the game.
That's a good point. Well, look, we've got a new House of Dragons show coming out.
That is
out.
Fair. Yeah. You know, like, I wonder how that's going to do.
Do you think that Call of Duty, I mean, I got to believe this is accurate.
I mean, this is very much a like classic, like, you know, how do you measure sentiment? You know, how do you?
Well, I mean, it's to some extent, it's brand recognizability, right? Like they've done studies, right, where it's like, oh, Mickey Mouse is recognized globally by like 98% of people. Mickey Mouse is the most recognizable character ever, right?
Yeah.
And while Call of Duty is no
that,
Mickey
Jesus.
Mouse. Right, a Call of Duty is no Mickey Mouse, but surely if you asked anyone off of the street, hey, you ever heard of Call of Duty? What's up?
Yes.
What is Call of Duty? I think you would get answers that aren't terribly off base. A popular video game. My nephew plays it. My cousin plays it. Whatever.
There was a time there where they would release the Call of Duty trailers during the NBA Finals every year, and you know, there would be pop culture references. Remember in one of those early seasons of The Office when Jim transferred to another branch and they would play Call of Duty during lunch break? You know, like there was a time, and it's less so now, but I agree with you, where like there was a time where Call of Duty was a suitably generic video game to just insert into a punchline.
Yeah. The way that people would call any console a Nintendo.
Exactly. Like, what are you doing? Playing Space Invaders? Like, in the 2000s, you could have said Call of Duty and people would know what you were talking about.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things that I thought was interesting is they also talk about loyalty, like the community loyalty. Mm-hmm. And Call of Duty is one of those games, right, where, you know, and I've looked at CMK data. Like, I'm very familiar with the type of games that people play. And there's a large subset of people that play video games, that quote-unquote play video games, who only play 1 to 2 video games per year. And overwhelmingly, like, we know what those games are, right? It's like FIFA, Call of Duty is one of them, right? So certainly there's a very large subset of Call of Duty players who are, in fact, extremely loyal. And so, but at the same time, there's part of me that wonders how much are we getting away from the idea of loyalty in the first place? Mm. Because especially after 2020 and lockdown and people got, you know, they're playing more video games and... You know, new exciting things come out, like Fortnite comes out, something big hits the market and you move on to something else. Part of me is curious, like, how true, do you think it's less true today than it was 4 or 5 years ago, the loyalty aspect of it?
I wonder if it's loyalty plus options, because you know, when Call of Duty was king of the world, there wasn't Fortnite, there wasn't Among Us, there wasn't, you know, a million other similar but catering to different niches type of forever games, whereas Call of Duty was one of the earlier progression-based forever games that were getting people introduced to that sort of style, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, really, in a weird way, I would put Call of Duty in its heyday similar to FIFA or Madden, where it's like, that could be the one game that people play for their entire year. And then once the year is up, they buy the new one and then they play that one for the entire year.
Yeah.
And maybe the thing that has changed is that games are now increasingly more flexible in terms of free to play or cross console or different, you know, mobile plus console type of thing. Whereas back in the day, it was like, there were people that played Madden, people that played Call of Duty, and then there were nerds like us who played a bunch of different stuff, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I just keep thinking back to the podcast we did where Elden Ring was the highest selling game of this year so far.
Yeah.
And it just boggles my mind. I just saw they posted a thing on Twitter today that it was one of the highest like viewership launches of all time, like 30 billion hours watched or something within the first X period of Elden Ring's release.
On Twitch?
On Twitch. I think across the board. It was on YouTube as well. I think it did both. Just this idea that like you can have games that I would never have thought to be even breaking the sort of popular consciousness being these powerhouses, right?
Yeah.
And we're also in a world where I think 5 years ago, it was harder to find, I think, games that were so dedicated and rewarding from a multiplayer perspective.
Yeah.
Right. So you'd buy one game and then switch to the next Call of Duty because that's what all your friends were playing. But there are a lot of options now.
Yeah.
Including games that are small, right? Like Fall Guys or Among Us got like super popular. And I know they don't, that's a drop in the bucket overall to what Call of Duty actually moves in terms of units.
Yeah.
But I do, part of me does wonder, like, what is the long term reality of loyalty mean in 5 to 10 years, you know?
I mean, and in an environment where people have so many different choices and the economics are different too, you know, you don't have to pay $60 to have a game that you'll play forever. You could pay $0 and have a game that you play forever, and the game changes too. So it's not going to get stale because they're just going to keep, you know, refreshing the mechanics or the season passes or all of that stuff.
I guess my argument would be Call of Duty will do that too, though. Like they will just be in that space.
Yeah, I think that's the pivot that they're trying to make. And in a weird way, I think the more successful they are in that pivot, the more it actually supports Sony's counter argument to Microsoft, which is Call of Duty will continue to be an essential franchise. You know, it's going to continue to be one of the biggest names out there. And, you know, maybe the government should force it to be across all, you know, genres, or it should slow down the acquisition or whatever. Its success just lends credence to the fact that this is monopolistic because for it's sure. such an effective franchise.
I mean, I'm of the mind, you know, better to be safe than sorry when it comes to monopolies. And if there's
nuke it
any,
from space, it's the only way
like
to
if
be
there's
sure.
any antitrust questions, like the fact that you're asking whether or not Call of Duty is essential means that you probably should not allow this acquisition to go through.
I think about the mind share thing is funny in terms of like brand recognizability. Like, does that actually correlate into an impact on the market? Because the way that the United States works most of the time is not
United
so much.
United States works, huh?
Well, you know, scare quotes around works, but you know, the antitrust stuff, generally the burden of proof is, does this hurt the consumer? Not, does this hurt other competitors? So unless you can kind of show that players themselves are going to have an inferior experience, you'll have a steep hill to climb to prove something like that.
I mean, we're in a world where Disney owns basically all of entertainment. Like it owns the movie theaters, it owns those tentpoles. Yeah. You know, there is a part of me that's just like, you know, even outside of the consumer model, what is the impact from a like artistic, creative perspective?
Well, and like the Disney stuff, you know, what this will allow them to do is eventually. have Master Chief show up in Call of Duty.
Yeah.
And most fans would probably love that. And like the problem with the whole does it damage the consumer or not is I think in the short term, it's kind of fucking awesome when one company owns everything because yeah. there's no IP fights anymore.
Right. And like so if Marvel could own Spider-Man, I wouldn't be complaining about it going back to Sony's hands.
I watched the Doctor Strange movie the other day on Disney Plus.
What a wild ride that was, huh?
Sam Raimi. Yikes. I mean, I kind of liked it just because it was so like weird and silly, but you know, they finally got their hands back on Professor X and the Fantastic Four and all of that stuff. And I was like, sick, finally, the Marvel Universe is unified and we can tell all these stories versus having them splintered across 20th Century and Sony and Disney and all this stuff. But again, it's great until the like bear hug becomes a death strangle, you know, and like it's fine now, but eventually the argument and people like me would argue that innovation is at great risk when all of this is like centralized under one big megacorp because, you know, there's no more incentive to be interesting or different. But in the short term, it's so cool to see Reed Richards show up in a movie with the Scarlet Witch, and you can actually now refer to mutants as capital M mutants because everyone owns everyone now. You know, like that's
it.
Yeah. But who knows what that means for the future.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is the next Fantastic Four movie is still going to be, you know, that same ironic comedy that is the Marvel brand in a way.
Yeah, it's going to be the like, you know, like the smeary graphics winking at the camera 24/7, like whatever, like all of that. But again, by the time that that happens, the acquisitions are done and it's gone. You know, like then you really have to bring, you know, it's much easier to stop an acquisition from happening than it is to break up a company. And, you know, that's a very, very rare thing, at least in the US anyway.
Yeah. I have a hard time imagining this not going through, though.
Yeah, I think it will take a long time, but I certainly... if there's any company that knows how to acquire other companies, it's Microsoft, you know?
It's Microsoft, Apple, it's a few others.
They've done this once or twice, and they wouldn't, unlike our buddy Elon, they're not just doing it for the lulz, you know? Like, they are serious about this, so they've probably thought through all these scenarios pretty hard.
Yeah. Well, besides Call of Duty, any other, like, must-haves? Like, what do you think are those games that... maybe besides Call of Duty, stand the test of time or stand the sort of like cultural impact element? Maybe not from like a monopolization console owning.
What is an essential franchise?
Yeah, what is an essential franchise?
It's funny. I was thinking of a few and then I realized, oh, Microsoft bought it. Like I was thinking about Minecraft. I was like, Minecraft has become an essential franchise in terms, which is funny because it's only ever been one game. And it will only ever be one game that they'll just keep adding things onto and, you know, creating spin-offs or whatever. But, you know, within the past 15 years, Minecraft has become that. But then I was like, oh, right, Microsoft bought them. Like, very clever.
Yeah, that's a good point, though, because I think it came when it really started to feel like Minecraft was a platform.
Yes.
You know, and around the same time, I guess, when, like, school started using it and it was like, oh, Minecraft is an education tool and teachers were, like... using it for their kid. And look, I agree. I think Minecraft is great of an experience for a younger audience. But yeah, I totally agree with that one, even if it's not something I've touched.
Yeah. What else? What do you think?
Well, I think FIFA for sure, like especially from an international perspective, like it's just, and you know, we have others. We had what, PES soccer? Was that like another soccer competitor?
There was, what was the 2K one? I forget what it was called. The interesting thing too is EA gave up the FIFA license, right?
Yeah.
So this will actually put it to the test. Like, what is the essential franchise? Is it EA's soccer game or is it the FIFA brand?
It's got to be the FIFA brand, despite me not wanting it to be. Yeah.
That's another thing where it's like, does anyone really like? If you look too hard, if you look at FIFA for any longer than 30 seconds, you realize what a mess it is. But
what a shish. Nobody likes FIFA as an organization.
Yeah. But I mean, the global reach of FIFA is undeniable.
That's the thing, yeah. Like, in the U.S., I would maybe argue Madden, but certainly not internationally. Like, it's just not a globally recognized thing the way that FIFA is, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Madden is, I think, is a good example, too, because they essentially have a monopoly on football games, period, and then that gets tied up in the Madden franchise.
Would you say that GTA is an essential game? Because that, to me, also feels like one of those games where people...
Yeah.
Certainly when GTA 5 was at its peak and GTA Online was like
really
widely played. I mean, it's still hugely played, right? It's still on the list.
It's of like top more popular of like, than ever. In a
it's crazy. Like within top games, right?
Yeah.
It is a game where people, you know, you could easily imagine a scenario in a movie or a TV show where a mother walks in and goes, what are you playing? Grand Theft Auto?
Yeah, yes.
You know, that is, that's what you say. So.
Well, and I was reading, there's been some, small news hits around GTA 6, you know, who the character is going to be, what are the themes going to be, and even the tiniest stealing drips cars. Of news still creates huge, you know, news stories and you know, interest in, oh, what is the next GTA going to be? So you're right. I mean, I think it's one of those that still has this huge mindshare associated with it.
I would say generically Mario, but it's really hard to pick, to be honest, because that's one where it's like Mario. I mean, Mario is like Mickey Mouse, right? Like as a character, he's iconic. But I don't think that there's a Mario game series that is essential. You know, people will say Mario, but it's like Mario World, Mario. Yeah, like which Mario?
Yeah. Well, and Mario's funny because it was... it's always been exclusive, and so we've never had the opposite test, you know, whereas Call of Duty has been multi-platform from the jump, you know. But, I mean, I totally agree with Mario, but I think it is the character itself versus Call of Duty as a series. You know, the closest thing you'd be able to say is like maybe something like Mario Kart.
Yeah, maybe. But even then, like, I don't know, because I don't think if I went to the random person on the street and said, Mario, finish the sentence.
Yes.
Mario. Right.
You know, is missing?
Like, yeah, brothers. Like, I don't think they would say cart first. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah.
What about something like Pokemon? Same deal?
I was going to say that. Like, I feel like Nintendo was smart in maintaining a controlling interest in Game Freak. I don't know what their setup is, but I know Nintendo has a lock on that stuff.
How much do you think it was Pokemon Go? Like, that's the wild thing to me. It's like that mobile experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it really reignited Pokemon for a lot of people that had not touched that game since Red and Yellow.
I was the people who live behind us in the corner, they have a really sweet backyard, and they have they've set up a screen and a projector in their backyard, and during the summer they watch movies. And I was taking out the trash the other night, and they have young kids, probably grade school, middle school age kids, and their kids and their friends' kids clearly were watching a Pokemon movie.
Hell yeah.
And I just remarked just mentally to myself, I was like, man, it is the staying power of Pokemon is
pretty
crazy.
Wild.
You know, now the people who played Gen 1 Pokemon are introducing it to people that are now in middle school. You know, it's just the multi-generational nature of Pokemon is super impressive.
Yeah, that's pretty nuts.
Any I don't know which movie it was, but...
Any other games that are essential, you think?
I was trying to think through...
It's only the creme de la creme, you know?
It really is. I mean, it's the things that... And I think they've tried to do this like with the license or whatever, but what if a platform holder like Microsoft was able to say, we have secured the rights to Tetris, you know, you know, something as long standing as that, you know, I think that starts to get into weird, like copyright issues of like, you can't copyright game mechanics. So like people could start creating clones or whatever, but people can create clones of Modern Warfare and Call of Duty and all that stuff. Like that doesn't
they
stop
do.
Them.
Yeah.
So is there something that is so, and Tetris has historically been all over the place. Like there's been Tetris. If something has had a screen, it has probably had Tetris on it. But what if Microsoft was able to be like, the official Tetris is now a Microsoft, part of the Microsoft gaming platform, platform, you know.
I mean, if they aggressively took it down from other services.
Exactly. Then, yeah. Like no more Tetris 99, no more, you know, Tetris, what was the future Tetris one? That was like a VR or whatever, all of that stuff. I mean, something so essential to game history would be intriguing to see.
Yeah. It's funny because what came to mind really was more so games that I think maybe years ago I would have said were essential, right? Like something like World of Warcraft, which I don't think is essential by any means now, but certainly in its heyday.
Yes.
I was like, how do you compete as a MMO? And we saw numerous MMOs attempt and fail and fall on their ass. But then remarkably, like, time moves on and Final Fantasy 14 is really big. And like, you know, there's other things in that space, you know?
Final Fantasy, I feel like, used to be one of those. I mean, what a big deal it was when it went to Sony, and then what a big deal it was when it started becoming truly a multi-platform, and now it's this kind of pan-platform franchise.
I mean, that's the kind of thing with Call of Duty, right? Is it has stuck, but I think especially now, like, who knows? I just don't know if I would even be comfortable saying, in 5 years, Call of Duty is still going to be making $3 billion net bookings every year, you know. I don't know. Because that's what's exciting about games, right? Like, I don't know.
it is exciting to see that stuff. I mean, I also think that I don't even know, 3 years is a long time for things to evolve economically too. And so Microsoft, it might be worth Microsoft's while to put it out everywhere. I mean, Microsoft puts Minecraft out on the Switch. You know, they don't lock that to a certain platform.
And I think you're right. Very much so. Yeah.
You know, they might say like, well, yeah, sure. Like, would it be nice if people played it on an Xbox? Yes. But we're not going to turn our nose up at the profit share that we get from every single console. And so, you know, it's more
And that's where the money's at anyway. Like, if you're selling MTX, like, you're going to be making more monthly off of your player base than you are on an individual sale at, you know, the first moment it's out.
Yes. Know? Yeah. It's like they'll take their taste out of every, you know, gun skin or whatever, I mean, whatever the Call of Duty sells now.
The one thing, though, that I could absolutely see them doing is still making the best experience the Microsoft experience, though, be it day one access to new characters or to those MTX items or to the test servers or to the test period, or maybe it's exclusive on Microsoft for the first couple months. So if you want to pick it up quickly, you know,
that's nefarious. Like that's because then you get the best of both worlds where it's like you can entice people into your first party platform.
Yep.
But also get the taste on the back end of people who don't have it or whatever, because they'll just buy the skin on whatever platform they're on anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And with the subscription model of Xbox Game Pass, like, why? I mean, it's kind of like that anyway.
Yeah.
Right? Like, why buy it on console day one if you could get it for free because you already paid for the Game Pass?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know when the next time I'll touch a Call of Duty game is, but I guess, you know, there's some sort of math that makes it work out in terms of, you know, their projection of the number of players and and all of that stuff. I mean, it just becomes another card in their deck, and it's not the only, it's not the only thing, which is, you know, by the end of it, Activision was basically the, you know, they had Call of Duty and they had all of the King games, you know, the mobile stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of it. Like, they had jettisoned almost everything else. So it was just kind of a, you know, a two or three product shop. And Microsoft is like, fine, we don't need Call of Duty to make all of that money because it's just going to be another one of the revenue streams for us.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what's funny is Call of Duty did used to be essential to you and I. Like, we did used to play it every
totally.
Year.
Totally. Yeah. And now I don't even know what Soap McTavish looks like anymore.
I'm going to guess gritty with an unshaven, like, beard and mustache.
is Soap McTavish still a main character? Like, have we missed the death of Soap McTavish?
Yeah, man. I have no idea.
Press X to pay respects.
Can we just reboot the whole shit? Like, just give me, like, a total hard reboot.
Just Soap McTavish's son?
Yeah, exactly.
Billy McTavish?
Dude, give me a satire. Bar Soap McTavish?
Hand Soap?
Hand Soap McTavish? The whole soap family.
Yeah, for me, it is. I agree. It's not necessarily. It's not one of those tentpole times of the year anymore, but that doesn't mean it's not a globally recognized brand and there's not, you know, value there. It's just, it ebbs and flows, and it's just another thing that Microsoft now has in its arsenal.
And it's many fingered grasp.
Yeah. It's ammo kit. It's what do they call those? The drops, the UAV drops or whatever that they have in Call of Duty.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right, experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is the website. You could also find us wherever you find podcasts. Do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. Tell a friend.
All right, everyone. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Ciao. Every time.